The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back as we head into hour three. We are delighted to do so as we are joined each and every Wednesday when he's in town by Congressman John Shattuck. He is an attorney and partner at Shattuck Associates, S-H-A-D-E-G-G, formerly representing Arizona's old 4th Congressional District. John, you were doing a little nostalgia with us last week.
We were.
And you were talking about a certain gas station I'd never heard of.
Where I...
Blakely, I guess.
Yeah, Blakely, yes.
And where you said, you said you were cruising Central with
Cruising
Steve
Central,
Curtis.
And when you got to Central and McDowell, you needed to do a U-turn. There weren't any people cruising, particularly any girls, cruising Central south of McDowell, so...
You mentioned these gas stations sold fine china, and
so there was
David,
a Blakely gas station, and I went into the Blakely gas station and turned it around, and both young David and I recall that the Blakely gas stations would give away both china and drinking glasses called tumblers.
Yes, and here
with
are two.
With cactus on them.
And here we have a set.
Young and David went
David
went back to 1959 and got you some.
Yes, I did.
I'm
I
impressed
with
how he got back there and came back.
Yeah.
Actually, I just opened up my cupboard.
David told us last week that he had them.
Uh-huh.
And I said, wow. And he said he would bring them in, and he did.
Why can't you talk about 1965 Rolls Royces? And then why do we have to talk about China then?
Hey, I could talk about a Ford truck.
They're all over the local antique stores. And it was a clever system. You know, if for every gallon of gas you get a coupon, you collect 10 or 15 coupons, you turn them in, and you get a piece of china. And there are whole sets of china in antique stores all over the city now.
And people had them. I mean, I think our neighbors had a full set.
I don't know what to say to you guys. I think I've said everything I have to say.
Well, the question is, how does David know? Because
David is the oldest
you're younger
young
than
person.
Me and he's younger than us.
I know. He's the oldest young person you've ever met.
There you go.
Yeah. But it is on that theme that I kind of wanted to address something to you, unless you wanted to start with anything else.
No. I'm ready.
You know,
I'm excited to be here.
Well, it's always wonderful having you. It's on that theme of how different the country is, how different the Democratic Party is. You and I may or may not agree on some of this, but let's do it anyway. We're continually told, and President Joe Biden likes to say, this is not your father's or grandfather's Republican Party. I object to that, and I'll tell you why in a moment. But I'd like to talk about the Democratic Party for a moment and how I don't believe it is his father's or even his Democratic Party of his youth. I was thinking about this when I noticed that the Arizona State Legislature today, the Israeli General Counsel came to speak and the Democrats vacated. They didn't want to sit there for that. And I saw the Assistant Minority Leader for the Senate Democrats wore a Hamas shawl over his with the entire map of Israel. This would never have been done probably even into the 90s. On abortion, this is going to be a big issue, I think, in a lot of states, including Arizona, with the state initiatives. I was doing a little research. In 1976, you probably voted on the Hyde Amendment any number of times unless they had been done with it. But yeah, so in 19...
Initially, long before I got there.
Right. So the Hyde Amendment banned federal funding for most abortions. And it passed the House originally in 1976 with 247 Democratic votes. 247 Democratic votes, including with Democrats like Mo Udall. Arizona's Mo Udall voted for it. You would not find probably two votes in the House if you would find two right now for that. So the parties have changed, I think, on some foreign policy. And they have Democrats have changed on some foreign policy. I believe they've changed certainly on social issues. And I object to the notion that the Republican Party is that far different, outside of perhaps trade issues, and some foreign policy issues. But to be honest, there are parts of the Republican Party's history, whether it's Robert Taft or Calvin Coolidge or William McKinley, you know, some of them, at least Calvin Coolidge could be on a Mount Rushmore if we were to create one, which shared some of those points of view that we find a little bit divergent from the Reagan coalition. John, your take, the differences in the parties, how different are they?
Well, societies change over time, and political parties, at least theoretically and largely in reality, reflect the values of the society in which they exist. I think that laws are the codification of society's mores, that while the legislature is sometimes asked to or pushed to get out on the cutting edge of the change and sometimes to precede the change before it occurs in the society, nonetheless, those mores change or evolve over time, whether we like it or not. And some of those changes are more offensive than others. I would agree certainly with the proposition that the Republican Party has changed, at least in my view, significantly less than the Democrat Party, especially on social issues. The Democratic Party has embraced kind of a panoply of social changes that please some in society, and because they're social changes, shock or offend others. And that's what's happened, I think, for example, with abortion or with same-sex marriage or with gender change.
Yeah, or female-male athletes and college athletics, that
across
kind of
the
stuff.
Way.
Yeah.
Republicans are, in fact, more conservative, and they are, as their critics will say, slower to embrace change. And so, as you would expect, the Republican Party has changed less, but it has changed. And I would argue that in both cases, both in the Democrat instance and in the Republican case, the changes reflect what's happened in society. And for example, we have seen, and I don't know the numbers, maybe you do, dramatic changes in faith or religion.
Yep.
Or
I can do numbers on those.
You know, the number of people who are regular church attenders.
Yeah. All time low.
Absolutely. Well, that is going to reflect itself in the political parties. And in fact, I would suggest reflect itself more dramatically in the Democrat Party. But let's move on down the list. Family. There was a day when nobody would question assertion that family is the bedrock of society. Mm-hmm. Nobody would stand up and say family is not the preferred structure for society and for the raising of children or the perpetuation of society. And yet today, the numbers again show the number of married people is
Used to be around 60%. It's now hovering around 40.
Right. And
it's a huge change.
And we think of that change as having occurred over a long span of time. But in fact, there are pretty dramatic and sudden changes. Today's younger generation, my children's generation, many of the young people, many of the young women are saying, I'm not interested in getting married. What's the point of getting married? Is it really worth it? What's the value of getting married? Why don't I just stay single and support myself and I can live as good or perhaps a better life? So the views of family have changed. I think the view of material goods, you know, when I was a kid, we had cement floors in our home. Now, they were fancy cement floors because they were colored brown.
Hold that thought. No, hold that thought. You're on to, you're going exactly where I wanted to go. This is great. John Shattuck is my guest. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. John Shattuck is my guest, and we're talking about, Congressman Shattuck and I are talking a little bit about the change of the parties, the change of America, and the change of the culture. We did a little bit of the parties and the law. I'm going to circle back to that in a moment, John, but you were just about to talk about the material changes as well. And you were saying when you were growing up, cement floor, did I hear you right? Cement floors were quite common.
Absolutely. None of the floors in our house were carpeted when I was little, I don't think. Not even carpeted. We had rugs in some rooms, but in the bedrooms and the hallways, it was just colored concrete.
Yeah.
Ours happened to be kind of a dark brown, but it, you know, the fancy new colored, colored concrete, you know, has all kinds of stuff and they work a lot at it. But this was just plain brown concrete. And actually, I guess it was special. Maybe we were some of the first greenies in America because the concrete in our house was, like I said, a kind of a dark chocolate brown. The concrete on the porch outside of our dining room was green.
Okay.
So we were greenies.
So were you in a wealthy person's home if it had carpet? Was that a sign of an upper?
Okay. That would have been a sign of wealth.
Okay. So similarly, two cars would have been a sign of wealth.
Yes.
The ability to travel by air.
We had a one-car carport.
Right. And air travel.
Yep.
And eating out. I was making the point, eating out. I grew up in a middle-class home, middle-class home, four kids. My dad mostly worked. My mom worked later in life. But one income, four kids. When we heard we were going to go out, when I would say, what's for dinner, Dad would say something like, well, we thought we might go out, which would have been twice a month. What a treat.
Right.
Today, people at young David's age, it's the default almost sometimes, right?
And people a lot older than young David.
Right.
Yep.
Right. So the material conditions have changed as well. One might say that there's very little difference between middle class and upper class in access to the same kinds of things, maybe just not the same kind of level. They both can fly in an airplane anywhere they want. Maybe one goes first class. But they both fly in airplanes. That never used to be the case.
One of the stunning examples of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Is cell phones. When cell phones first came out, I kind of thought, well, just the rich people will have them. The middle class.
Mobile phones, they called them.
The middle class will get them, but not maybe for 5 or 10 years.
Right.
Wrong.
Wrong.
The middle class and below wanted them and had them almost instantly.
Right. Answering machines.
Absolutely.
Answering machines was a fancy thing. Cable was a fancy thing. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I think a part of that happened at the same time as the expansion of government.
Okay.
And so I personally believe very strongly that some of the reshaping of the American workforce and of the American family was that government demanded much, much more. It demanded a much higher percentage of a family's income to where today it's pretty clear that if you don't have a two-income family, you're doing without.
Okay.
And so I think that when taxes went up and that meant both spouses had to work, well, if both of us are going to work, then we ought to have some of the nicer things. And so people began between the middle class and the upper class, or the upper middle and the middle, and even the below middle, all expected things, and they got them. We were able to manufacture cell phones for cheap. We were able to manufacture
microchips. Cheap. Everyone got a computer.
Nice tile. Ultimately, actually, we had carpet in our house.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, and it only took a day to install.
There you go.
Right. Okay. So let me go back to something you said in the first segment, because I think this is a great course in civics. The laws we pass reflect the mores of society, you put it.
Posited, yep.
And I think it can also go a little bit the other way. I don't know if it's the same amount, but sometimes the laws can change society. So a lot of people will point to, at least culturally, a lot of people will point to the Supreme Court decisions of the 60s when it came to taking out the Regent's Prayer in schools and making moments of silence.
I was
going
to say, prayer
in
schools was one I was going to get to.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
It made a dramatic change.
Yeah, that was
a
dramatic.
In society.
As was Brown versus Board for obviously the better.
Yep.
Integration made a big difference to society. I would say it had its almost exact intended effect. The effect was people would be less racist over time if they actually sat and learned and had lunch together with people of different, if they actually got to know them, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
And that worked.
Yep. In the West, yeah. I tell people growing up as a kid, we didn't know race.
Right.
It wasn't an issue.
Right.
We had people of other races around our house, and they were just people.
Right.
We did not know it was even a controversy.
Right, right. Arizona was kind of a little special that way.
Harry Goldwater integrated.
Sky Harbor,
Sky Harbor
and the Air Guard and all that.
Long before similar things were done across the country.
I always kind of hoped that somewhere whoever made the decision to name Terminal 4, the Barry Goldwater Terminal, that it had something to do. I don't know if it did or not, but I always kind of like whenever I come in and out of there to think that, you know, Goldwater was the guy who desegregated this in the long before the Civil Rights Act.
He actually was also the guy who created it. He worked in the family's department store.
Yeah.
And at least every story I've ever heard was that he would come in very early.
Yeah.
And once he'd gotten the management of the store down, he'd come in like at 5:30. But once he had kind of gotten the store where he wanted it after his father, Baron, had died, he got a little bored with it. He knew how to fly. He'd grab the first person through the door, say, come on with me. They'd go out to a dirt field, which was not called Sky Harbor, but it was the closest place he could land a plane. Mm-hmm. And he and whoever he'd grabbed would get in the plane and fly to the Navajo Reservation or usually the Navajo Reservation, sometimes the Hopi, sometimes other places.
Do you remember him using a helicopter?
I don't.
My memory of him from the home was that he later in life would use a helicopter. Maybe he had someone. In any event, that we would always say that's Goldwater's helicopter.
I remember him loaning our family a two-seater Jaguar that my sister got to drive in Prescott, where we would rent or ultimately built a summer home.
There you go.
So we have
a summer home is a difference.
There
who
you go.
Had summer homes?
Summer homes.
You know. Okay. So the laws can shape the culture a little bit. We think that happened with segregation. We think it happened with some of those prayer and Supreme Court cases. Probably the pill. Probably abortion in 73 and 74 and outward. These had effects on society too. But then society pushed back a bit, didn't it, too, in the 1970s. That's when you saw the kind of the rise of the evangelical political movement. Francis Schaeffer and then Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson. Let me take a break and come back on some of that, because I think something needs to be said about the religious revival that took place here in response to some of that as well. John Shattuck is my guest, and he and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Congressman John Shattuck, my guest, head of Shattuck Associates, represented Arizona's old congressional, 4th Congressional District for many years, and now practices law and political consulting and all kinds of consulting. Anyone who's got trouble with the government, might have trouble with the government, has had trouble with the government, he's there to help you out.
Exactly.
Client base of about 7 billion people.
Just about everybody.
You must have a large staff. changes in society in America. So there were these legal pushes against some of the mores that came from the Supreme Court on prayer decisions. Perhaps one would throw in the pill and abortion as well into the early 70s. And it awakened an evangelical conservative response. And as I said that, I almost wanted to correct myself just a little bit. It wasn't just Francis Schaeffer and Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson. a good decade and a half before, I think some credit has to go to Phyllis Schlafly.
Yes.
For seeing some of this in pushing for the Goldwater effort in 64, to be sure, and her Eagle Form work in the 70s. Now, when you were elected in 94, that may have been that might have been the apex of that movement coming into fruition. The Christian Coalition loomed large. Chuck Colson's work loomed large. And then it kind of dissipated. But interestingly enough, I'm just freelancing here, John. You correct me and if anything I say doesn't ring true. But something else changed maybe a little bit with the Republican Party as well when you guys got into Congress. You know, I said the Democratic Party used to be very pro-Israel. The Republican Party was kind of a coin toss until 1994. By the mid and early 90s, the Republican Party almost became four square, 100% supportive of Israel.
I was going to say, in my memory, the Republican Party has always been supportive of of Israel.
Okay.
Going as far back as I can remember, I don't know further back than that.
Okay.
But it has always been an anomaly because the Republican Party supported Israel, but Jewish America voted Democrat.
Always.
By a wide margin and dramatically so. And it was unquestioned. It was.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Jewish liberal vote. Jewish, yeah. It's just a thing.
Jewish Americans will vote Democrat.
Right.
So don't spend a lot of time working on getting them. You ain't.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I think, as you say, the Republican Party was every bit, from my perception, as supportive of Israel as the Democrat
Party. Okay.
Now that's actually, stunned, absolutely in shock at how much that has changed inside the Democrat Party.
The change is huge there.
Oh, my gosh.
But you know what, John, too?
Joe Lieberman almost became, when the current conflict started, Lieberman became almost alone amongst Democrat leaders to speak out in defense of Israel. I'm sure that would offend a lot of people, but the reality is...
It's true. Him and Alan Dershowitz, and that was about it.
Very, very few of them.
Jewish Americans
got on...
Right. Not even Chuck Schumer, right? Not
got
Jerry
on
Nadler.
The,
none of those guys did, right.
Soapbox in the park and said, you know, this is our ally. We have to be with them. This is Israel, for goodness sake.
Let me set this up because this is perhaps the biggest and maybe most controversial thing I'm going to say, and we'll pick it up in the longer segment in the next after this break. There would have been a time in the 60s, certainly the 70s, where if you called a Democrat a socialist, they would have taken great umbrage and offense.
Absolutely.
They would have yelled, "You're questioning my patriotism." They would have objected
have been
and called
offended.
You McCarthy tactics.
They would have been instantly offended.
Right.
And, no, I'm not.
Yeah, and McCarthy tactics and that sort of thing. They are now proud and, in fact, came close to nominating twice someone who identifies as a socialist, and they now endorse socialist candidates.
Speaking of which, party has changed.
Right. So let me come back on that with you, if I can. John Shattuck is my guest. We're kind of doing a tour of change in American politics and culture today. Kind of interesting, I think. We'll be right back.
A little bit has happened.
A little bit has happened. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. John Shattuck is my guest. Congressman Shattuck. Changes Democratic Party we're talking about, changes in America. So we were making the point that if in the 60s, 70s, or even 80s you called, or 90s, a Democrat a socialist, they would say that's McCarthyism, you're questioning my patriotism. Today they're very proud to identify with socialists, practically nominating one twice, supporting in primary socialists over non-socialists in the Democratic Party. And I guess there's another part that attaches to it too, John. If I asked you what the party was that distrusted the FBI and the CIA and government censorship, You know, that was the liberal position.
Absolutely. That was the position of the Democrats in the 60s or 70s.
Right.
And not the Republican Party. The Republican Party was the party of law enforcement, and it was the party that stood behind the FBI. Jumping off of your point earlier about socialism or what I guess I would call extreme leftist views becoming accepted as okay or mainstream, I was elected in 1994, began serving in 1995, and sitting here right now, I cannot, well, I take that back. I can only think of perhaps one, and there may have been one or two, members of Congress, they happen to be in the Democrat Party, who would not have been offended by being called socialist, but they were a tiny, tiny, tiny minority, and even they didn't make an issue of it. Now, not that much later, it hasn't been 50 years since I left Congress. Since I left? I left in 2011, so that's what?
Yeah,
12 years. Not a huge span of time. Now there are, I would say, at least a dozen.
And again, the nominee, almost nominee twice, and over 100 in the state legislatures across the country.
And they are
identifying.
Not only not embarrassed or cautious or understated in their support of either socialism or communism, they are open advocates. They will tell you, I'm a socialist. Yep. Oh, and by the way, I believe that's a better system. Mm-hmm. So that change has been dramatic. I said to somebody in a political conversation in the last 24 hours that even when I was serving, even toward the end of my tenure, which was 2011, I couldn't. There was nobody that I know of that was out on the floor and in the public saying, I believe in socialism,
uh-huh.
or I believe in communism,
uh-huh.
or I believe in the government running people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now they're there, and it's not a tiny minority. It's a substantial chunk of people.
And who defends big pharma and big industry and the big C-suite corporations these days?
Well,
I'm old enough to remember bumper stickers, which were mostly on Democrats' cars, about don't trust the corporations, people not profits, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, and when we got there in the Gingrich Revolution, we were staunchly anti, what's the word, crony capitalism.
Yeah, right.
But we found, you know, some Republican supporters of crony capitalism. But my class had as one of its targets crony capitalists, mm-hmm. who wanted the government to put its finger on the scales, mm-hmm. and make life better for them, mm-hmm. not necessarily for their workers. Mm-hmm. So
who used to defend free speech? The ACLU has dropped it totally.
It's just not
a free speech organization anymore. It's a pro-abortion organization, mostly a pro-gay rights and pro-abortion. Not gay rights, transgender rights. We don't do gay rights anymore.
I think for a while nobody defended free speech.
Yeah.
And now it is only defended by the right.
Right. Right. That's a change too.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's an odd thing to me that Joe Biden or the Democratic panjandrums, the leaders, have landed on this notion that what they want to campaign against is a phrase called Make America Great Again.
There you go.
That's a very odd thing to campaign against and get support for campaigning against.
I guess in this context, during the 2022 election, I can remember a point when I thought, wow, this is bizarre. It used to be that they would assert, Democrats would assert, that Republican policies are out of step with America. They're just not reasonable. They're not where the majority of Americans are. By the 2022 election, the opposite was true. I actually was talking with one of my colleagues, and he said, we could go out today, or we could encourage Republicans to go out today. This is in 2022, and campaign that we are the party of reasonable policies, and they are the party of shockingly extreme policies. Men should be able to compete in women's sports.
Use their bathrooms.
Showers, yeah. Young children should be able at a very young age to decide for themselves whether they were male or female. And the school should assist in hiding that from the parent if that's what the child wants. Those are stunning changes.
Popular. They have a lot of popular support.
Well, one that was embraced, and I think a lot of Americans people missed this, was the criminal justice reform,
right,
where they said, oh, cash bail is evil. Right. And they repealed it everywhere, and now we're paying the price in a huge spike in crime and even in violent crime. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. You know, now we're discovered and are barely doing anything about the fact that the criminals that are on the street, that's not their first arrest or second or third. It's their 20th. And nobody puts them in jail and nobody keeps them there. They're out in minutes.
How about the ethnic? I'm glad you raised that, because the ethnic Democrats, the Catholics, the Italian Americans and the Irish Americans who staffed police and fire departments, you pull a police and fire department employee now, they're voting Republican.
Absolutely.
It should be a Democrat thing, right?
I think Trump was bragging last night. He just got the unanimous endorsement of, I think it was the Michigan Law Enforcement Society.
Well,
the representatives of all police in Michigan. Representatives of them, but, you know, that would not have happened.
No.
They were in the
Irish Catholic Democrats and Italian Catholic Democrats, I think. What was the old joke? The Irish Catholics were police and the Italian Catholics were firemen, I think. In Arizona, we just had rural fire. Do you remember rural metro fire with the yellow fire trucks?
Are you kidding?
Yellow green chartreuse fire trucks, I think we had.
When I left the Attorney General's office, rural metro was my first meaningful client.
Oh, okay. All right. Good. Good. Let me conclude with you in a minute. John Shattuck and I'll be right back with some concluding thoughts. William O. Douglas said, Americans are a religious people whose institutions presuppose a supreme being. And the religious aspect that we touched on in this hour, John Shattuck, is I still think probably the controlling, interesting shift. You were telling me on the break about the first time it really became, I don't know if one would say slightly more polite or slightly more politic was to discuss it, was when John Kennedy ran in 1960.
In 1960, the fact that John Kennedy was a Catholic, oh my gosh,
right,
was a huge issue. I mean, everybody talked about it. Now, I was thinking about this way out here in the rugged West. I began to hear that in 1960. And I thought, what's the big deal about being Catholic? What are they talking about?
Right.
Because to me,
again, that
I'm not
Arizona
even sure
thing.
At that point in my life that I knew the difference between a Catholic and a Protestant. You know, it was, did you go to church or didn't you? And, you know, fine distinctions, or maybe not even fine distinctions, but distinctions between Protestants and Catholics just didn't exist out here in the West. And yet, where most of the country lived, there was a lot of controversy. Yeah. Could we trust a Catholic?
Yeah.
But the point was, you raised the issue of when the evangelicals became major players in elections, and that was much later than 1960.
Yeah, right. I don't think they really had a candidate until Ronald Reagan in 1980, and certainly George W. Bush a decade later.
And even for Reagan, it was a kind of a small side issue. Oh,
right.
Those religious people support him.
Right.
Which was not a...
No, that's right. But it's interesting. Jerry Falwell's moral majority in 1980 was the first time they kind of shifted to the Republicans. You know, they were kind of with Jimmy Carter in 76.
Absolutely.
Because they had the Southern Baptist connection.
Yeah.
Until Jimmy Carter went after the schools. And then they said, okay, we're not doing this anymore. Right?
And then they looked at a lot of other things.
Right. And then they started. It always starts with the schools, man. If you want to. And that's where we started, 1962 in the school prayer case. That it all. Education is everything. It's still everything.
People
in this
don't
country.
Study the impact of the school of
right.
school prayer and how
That's
much
right.
it right. changed America.
That's right. And how much the schools are used for social change, whether it was integration, whether it was prayer. Adults tend to use the schools
or
to
whether
lay
it's
out their
used
political
for yeah. woke indoctrination.
Yeah, exactly right. John Chaddick, thank you for this hour.
A lot of fun.
Until tomorrow, on behalf of Young David, Mr. Bill Terry, and Congressman Chaddick, I'm Seth Leibson. God bless you all. Class is dismissed.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.